Third Coast Digest is brought to you in part by 91.7 FM, WMSE Frontier Radio.
John Stipe, thanks for coming in. Welcome. You teach third grade, but you also work in a comic book store, correct?
Yeah, I work at Collector's Edge Comics. We have four locations. I actually work at the West Dallas location. I've been with Collector's Edge for 20 years. Because I am a full-time teacher, I only work there on Sundays. But I've been a comic fan since I was about 8 years old, and I'm slightly more than 8 years old now.
Aged a little bit, but you're doing it very well.
Thank you.
What were your favorite comics when you were 8 years old?
I have always been a superhero guy, and always. Superheroes are the most popular comics that are still being published today,
right.
But sometimes they say, what are 42-year-old guys reading superhero stories?
Well.
And the interesting part for me is that as I grew up, the theme of comics and fighting and good versus evil and all that is very fun. It's very action-adventure type of thing. But at the same time, I found myself more drawn to the soap opera aspect of comics, which is something when I talk to people about it, the example I always say is I never worried whether Spider-Man was going to beat the bad guy, but I worried whether Spider-Man was going to be able to pay his phone bill.
It is. It's a good question because, yeah, what he takes pictures for a living and he worries about that. I only know Spider-Man through the movies because you were under Good Thing if you liked superheroes in comic books then, because now they're in movies, every movie.
Yeah, comic books are the source of ideas for Hollywood and have been now really, really big money makers for Hollywood for the last 10 years.
Right, right. And especially now that we've got all these CGI computer effects and everything that we can do.
Yeah, I grew up as a fan of these characters who, in some cases, aside from some cartoons like Super Friends or the Spider-Man cartoons of the 60s, where basically we had no live-action version of these. Oh, you had
right.
The Lou Ferrigno Hulk show in the 70s,
right.
And now you look at the Hulk that they can do with CGI versus taking Lou Ferrigno, who's about a foot taller than a regular guy, and painting him green and
right.
Having him growl.
And they keep doing the Hulk over and over and over again
yeah,
with different Hulks.
There's been two movie versions of the Hulk, okay. Now with the big budget. The Ang Lee version, which was the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon director, who basically wanted to make a moving comic
right.
strip.
Right.
So there's actually parts of the movie where the frames freeze like a panel in a comic, and then your eyes travel to the next one. The biggest complaint about that movie was there wasn't enough Hulk in the Hulk movie. That one was
right.
Just called Hulk. And I remember seeing that one in the theater because I tend to only go to comic book movies because I have three kids, and with my regular job, I don't get to a lot of movies. In the Hulk movie, the Ang Lee one, it's 55 minutes into the movie before he actually turns into the Hulk.
Okay.
And I remember watching that movie going, come on, you have to just, eventually you have to show us
give
this.
Me the Hulk,
yeah.
Right. Give and me the hero.
The follow-up one to that one was called Incredible Hulk. And it was
Ed Norton.
Edward Norton, yep. That one, I think they did a much better job with that because they also took the origin of the Hulk and showed it to you in the opening credits. And
okay.
That's a huge thing for comic book fans is we don't like it when they change the origins. We don't like it when they do things different. We tend to be pretty particular about this because these characters have been, in the case of Superman, have been published since, you know, the 1930s.
Right, yeah.
Batman since 1940. So we want to make sure that they're going to be true to the characters, and at the same time, there's certain things that they can and can't do on the screen. I always bring up the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie, which made a ton of money and is very, very entertaining. It takes forever for him to become Spider-Man in that movie because, for me, I've read his origin so many times. And
right.
His origin could be told in three pages.
Right.
And obviously, they're dealing with the mass audience who doesn't know the story.
Doesn't know it. And they're also just storytelling techniques. They want to draw you into his life.
Absolutely.
I mean, something you mentioned before about the mundane aspect, the soap opera aspects, the mundane aspects of the life are one of the things that interested you. And what Raimi does in the Spider-Man one is he really gives that guy, Tobey Maguire, Peter Parker, a really kind of miserable life.
Absolutely.
For him to grow out of.
Yeah, Spider-Man is the Charlie Brown of the superhero set,
yeah.
And always has been. Since Stan Lee and Steve Ditko created him, he is the guy that, in the end, it's always going to land butter side down for him when
right.
He drops something because it's just never supposed to work out for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I think the movies do a good job of that with this, you know, I think Tobey Maguire, I think the cast did a really nice job. I also think some of these things now are a little more ingrained in the general consciousness where people kind of knew that his uncle was going to die. But in the case of the Spider-Man movie, yes, he got bit by the spider. Yes, he was a nerd. Yes, he wakes up and suddenly he's ripped. And yes, all of a sudden he can do these incredible things. And as a fan, when we get to that point in the movie where we actually see him doing the things that I've been reading about all my life, the other thing that I always equate that to is watching fireworks, because I just want to see him do those things.
You want to see the big bang at the end, right?
And I read, exactly. One of the big movies this summer was Green Lantern, and I think Green Lantern has a huge backstory. The character's been published originally in the 40s, and then a different Green Lantern was created in the 60s. He's a space cop. He's got all these other space cops that are out there, all these aliens, the ring, and everything else.
The Guardians.
Exactly. And I'm watching this new movie now with Ryan Reynolds, and as I'm watching it in the theater, I basically just want to shout at the screen, can you just put the ring on and start making stuff? Because that's the part that I came to see. Right. And at the same time, they're doing the love story and the love interest and stuff, and I get that you need that, but you have to come up with a happy balance between giving the audience what they want to see in a superhero movie along with all the slice of life stuff.
And you're right before, as you said, you have to deal with an audience that may not know the Green, because Green Lantern is kind of an old one. Do they still do Green Lantern?
Absolutely.
Comics?
Green Lantern is very, very popular right now. The two big companies for American superhero comics are Marvel Comics, which is Spider-Man and the X-Men, and Captain America, which is coming out in a couple of weeks.
Right.
And DC Comics, which is Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman. And Green Lantern is basically the next level down from Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. There's actually 3 monthly Green Lantern comics.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Still, they still make them. They still do Batman.
There's 5 monthly Batman comics.
Now, do you see, say, the Batman comics being influenced by the movies? I mean, because Chris Nolan kind of took what was done in the 80s and, I guess, the 90s for Batman, which was very comic booky, with an emphasis on the comic, with the Joker and Danny DeVito playing the Penguin, and he kind of looked deeper into it for the darker parts of it.
Yeah, but basically that was already there for the comics. It wasn't there for the comics for Joe Public, because Joe Public, if you say Batman, depending on the age of them, they know Adam West.
Right.
And I grew up with Adam West, and I actually really, really enjoyed Adam West when I was a kid. It was in the 60s, and I was watching him in reruns in the 70s. The part that I actually really like when I look back on it is I didn't realize it was camp. I didn't realize it was parody because I was 8.
Right.
So some of the stuff that I watch when I see some of these shows that are now on cable, like the Adam West Batman show, I'm catching the double entendres and things like that
right.
I didn't really get the first time.
Right.
All I saw was
so
a live action Batman and Robin.
But now, if you're a Batman comic book fan, that series doesn't satisfy you, does it?
As far as what you asked with the cart leading the horse, as far as are the comics acting like the movies, it's actually the other way around. Because Batman's been published for so long. When the 60s TV show happened, Batman wasn't even selling very well. And when the 60s TV show happened, it took off as a huge TV success that was on 2 nights in a row and things like that.
Right.
And in the case of Batman, it actually led the comics to get campier and to get goofier and to get sillier.
Okay.
In the 1970s, comics in general, DC Comics in particular, got socially relevant. And suddenly they were doing stories about drugs and they were doing stories about racism.
Right.
And there were a lot of things that basically all of a sudden they realized there's no TV show anymore. We can do whatever we want. And Batman got very, very dark in the 70s.
Right.
Batman got even darker in the 80s when Frank Miller did The Dark Knight Returns, which is a hugely influential 4-issue miniseries for Christopher Nolan. There's actually a bunch of comics that are out there that Christopher Nolan read or his people read and then synopsized for him that he basically is kind of basing the movies on.
Okay. All right. So he didn't turn it dark. I mean, the persona of Batman always was kind of dark and mysterious, and then it got taken to this other direction with the television series and with all the different people that played Batman.
Sure. Well, the Michael Keaton Batman,
right,
of Tim Burton. The Tim Burton Batman, the interesting part for being a comic book fan is I watch these characters that have been around forever get reinvented or re-examined,
sure,
by different, whether it's Batman the Animated Series from the 90s, which was Paul Dini and Bruce Timm, who'd made an incredibly epic cartoon that was way more unbelievably mature than you would expect them to be able to do, and it won you know, animation awards and daytime Emmys and things like that. The guys that are making the movies now grew up watching Batman the Animated Series from the 90s because right. they're not old enough to have watched the Adam West show.
Right.
I can remember people freaking out when they announced that Michael Keaton was Batman because Michael Keaton was Mr. Mom and he was Beetlejuice.
Right.
And it was like, they're going to make Batman into a joke again and Batman's not a joke. Then the movie comes out and it's huge. And I personally think it's huge because of Jack Nicholson in that first movie.
Yeah.
But I also think that The Dark Knight, which is the last one we just had from Christopher Nolan, was huge because of Heath Ledger.
Well, yeah, the Joker does in both of those, I think, takes over.
Yes. Yeah. And it was quite tragic what happened with Heath Ledger. But I think the death of Heath Ledger actually even further made The Dark Knight into the success that it was. Because then
it was a great marketing boy.
And there were all these things like, did the movie drive him to take the pills? And is that what killed him? And the whole, he was an actor. And they talked about how the fact that when he was on set, he wasn't walking around all silly and he wasn't acting goofy. He was an actor, and he realized he was an actor. But he does such a great job that he steals every single scene he's in that movie. And then you watch it knowing that he's not making any more of these is actually even more sad because you would love to see him return as the Joker.
Well, that's another thing that's interesting about something you said earlier about you as a comic book fan want to see them get to the action. You want to see the Green Lantern put the ring on and start making stuff. But a lot of what I see when they're building these superhero movies is they're building a franchise,
yes.
too. I mean, they go into it thinking this is this is not a one-off. This is two, three, four-off, however many we can get out of it.
Whether you go back to the Star Wars trilogy or whether you talk about the Lord of the Rings or anything, nobody makes one movie anymore.
Yeah.
Whether we're talking about The Hangover or we're talking about a superhero movie, people make movies to have there be a sequel and
a
third one, and that's how they sign on for them. An example that I want to use for that is Ghost Rider. Now, you may or may not have ever heard of Ghost Rider, but as a comic book superhero from the Marvel superhero universe, he's been around since the 70s. And there was actually a Western Ghost Rider even longer than that. And when I was a kid...
there's a Western Ghost Rider in the Ghost Rider movie, is that?
Yes. Okay. And that's basically drawing on that, the fact that there really was a Western Ghost Rider character. Because, again, sometimes the directors of these movies are... me, and they want to throw in little Easter eggs or they want to throw in extra stuff. Sometimes they take it in a completely different direction and it angers the fans, and the fans say, okay, we're not going to do that. When I was a kid, Ghost Rider, it's a flaming skull motorcycle guy. Is there anything better? And I would love to see a guy with a motorcycle that's on fire with his head on fire. That sounds awesome. It's a good thing I never
and
tried it myself.
And leaves a trail of fire everywhere
he
goes.
Can drive up the side of the buildings, and he's got the chain and the whole thing. And they announced the movie, and it's not a great movie. It's not. Aww. However, to me, it goes back to watching fireworks again. I sat there in the theater and said, I can't believe this. That's Ghost Rider. His head's on fire. That's awesome. And his head on fire was better than when he was Nicolas Cage doing that part. So I have a reputation for liking all comic book movies, but I also think that what I try to do when I go into these movies is I try to find stuff that I like.
Right.
I actually want these movies to succeed. I don't need validation. I don't need somebody to say, it's okay, hey, look, your movie made a lot of money. I guess comics aren't really that scary. I guess you're not a freak for liking them. But I like them to do justice to the characters because these are characters that mean an incredible amount to me.
What does it mean when Nick Cage turns into the Ghost Rider and when we know that he's the devil's bounty hunter?
See... and that's such a stupid idea for a movie. I take my wife to the movies, and she is a comic book fan by extension because she's grown up now with me, and comics are in our house and they're everywhere.
Because they do say that marriages won't work if you're a comic book fan and she's not.
Well, and that's what I wanted to make sure that my marriage would work. We're going on, we're 19 years together, and my wife is, thank you. She's a trooper when it comes to being interested in the stuff that I'm interested in. So I'll sometimes tell her comic stuff or movie comic stuff, and she'll just get that look on her face like, whatever, John, I'm not really listening. But she's polite enough to let me do that. And there are other times where, for example, another big one this summer was Thor.
Right.
She really liked that movie. She knew nothing about Thor. For one thing, she says he looks a lot better with his shirt off than the guy who played Green Lantern looked with his shirt off.
Right.
So they definitely did a good job of picking a really ruggedly handsome guy, Chris Hemsworth is the guy who played Thor.
Right.
At the same time, they have to build this huge mythology for Thor, another character that's been around since Stan Lee and Jack Kirby created him in the 60s, with the hammer and Asgard and Odin and Loki and all the stuff that's in there.
Huge backstory.
I think in that case they did a really good job. I thought Thor was a really good movie. That director, who I know has done countless other
Shakespeare,
quote, real projects, he took it and he basically said, I'm going to take this material and I'm going to treat the source material the way you would treat an Edgar Allan Poe story or the way you would treat a Shakespeare story. I'm not going to say, well, this part was dumb or this doesn't make any sense or the audience won't understand that. All the stuff that he put in the Thor movie is in the comics. It's not all exactly the same. It can't be exactly the same. They can do so much more in comics, even with CGI, even with the special effects. If there's one thing I want to get across that I wanted to say today is no matter how good a comic book movie is, no matter how good or successful a superhero movie is, it's never going to be better than the source material. There's so much more that they can do on the printed page with the imagination of the writer and the imagination of the artist with no limitations at all. They literally had the unlimited special effects budget. And I think Iron Man was great, and I think Captain America is going to be awesome, but I can find Iron Man and Captain America comics that give me a much bigger rush and have for 40 years. So right. The movies are cool. I'd still rather have the comics.
But it's just a movie. You'd rather read the novel. I mean, it's the same happens when you take a novel
Absolutely.
And try to make it into a movie. Then movie ends up shortchanging you.
So yeah. So I'm excited about – I thought Thor, as I said, was a good movie, and they did a really nice job. I think Green Lantern was a fun movie that I think had some problems with it. Mm-hmm. I also think the reaction then, because we live in the internet/Twitter immediate reaction of everything, is when some people didn't like it, all of a sudden it was like the worst thing ever. Right. So by the time I went to see the movie, which was literally 2 days after it opened, the newspaper said I wasn't supposed to like it, and something else said it was going to be horrible, and I walked out of the theater and I said, oh, that was fun. Now, I didn't walk out of the theater and say, oh, that changed my life, but right. At the same time, I was not embarrassed by what they did. There's some of them that really, really aren't good. The Halle Berry Catwoman movie, The Spirit, which was actually a Will Eisner character from the 1940s, which was reimagined by Frank Miller a few years ago, right. And it was just atrocious.
Now, Frank Miller's the one that made Sin City, too,
yep.
Right?
Frank Miller made his name doing Daredevil and then doing Batman The Dark Knight Returns. And then he did Sin City, of which Zack Snyder has made literally a frame-by-frame adaptation of the graphic novel. If you actually watch the Sin City movie, you can find panels in the movie that are shot straight from the comic, which also kind of makes me wonder, too, because then why don't you just read the comic? I mean, but he didn't
make
want
more money.
Well, that you know what? You're right. That Zack Snyder wanted to make a Sin City movie that was absolutely faithful to Miller's stuff. And that goes back to what I was saying before. If the creators of the movie think that they're better than the material or above it or whatever, they're not going to give the same type of respect for the source material.
Right. But I want to go back to the rush that you get from reading the comic books.
Okay.
What is that? I mean, when I read comic books or watch superhero movies, the morality, Green Lantern sort of takes it way over the top, but the morality and the questions of good versus evil are so heavy-handed in a way, or so strong and so black and white, that I lose the interest in the story pretty quickly.
See, and that's actually probably what I get out of it. I was raised on Superman and Captain America, so you don't get much more like wholesome white bread than that.
Right.
And in the case of that, the purpose of all of these stories to me is no matter how hard, eventually the good guy wins. In all of the comic books that I've read in all my life, it might take 12 issues for this story to come to an end.
Right.
But in virtually all of them, even though he might be beat to hell by the time it's over, the
right.
hero's the one who walks home victorious.
Right.
And I was raised by the morality of that. And I realized that that's, as you said, in some cases, it's extremely heavy-handed. You go into becoming a comic book fan because they look cool, because they do neat things. Wolverine is an awesome character from the X-Men. Look, he spits knives out of his arms.
Right.
That's incredible. But then when you read about Wolverine, you find out all these backstory intricacies that the writers are able to put into the stories because they have the time and they have the format in order to do that.
Right.
And you find out things about the character that they can't possibly do in the movie.
Yeah, when you read a series of comic books, there's so much depth and richness to the character. It's like doing a television series.
If Absolutely.
You do 3 years on a series, you get to, as an actor, you get to build a character that's much more complicated than any character you can give depth to in a movie.
Well, and comics are, as you just said, they're periodicals. Superman right. and Batman and Wonder Woman are the only three characters that have been published continuously in superhero comics once a month, every month for the last 70 years.
Yeah.
So sometimes I read comics and I go, well, I've kind of read this one before, or you know, this one could have been better or whatever. Right. But at the same time, they're telling modern mythology of these characters, and there's going to be Batman comics long after I'm gone.
Yeah, that probably will be. Well, that's another thing I want to talk about, because you mentioned earlier that during the 70s they began to get more topical.
Yep.
At what point and why do you suppose the comic books started involving themselves in drugs, in crime, street crime?
I can actually answer that. What happened in the 40s was comics were published for boys, mm-hmm. 5 to 9, roughly. Okay. And every 3 years, they assumed that you would get a new crop of readers. So they were basically recycling the same stories.
Right.
What happened in the 60s was they were basically looking for things to do with comics because superheroes had run their course in the late 40s, early 50s, and they had Westerns and war comics, and they had romance comics. And they basically had this what's called the Silver Age of comics, which is when DC Comics started publishing superheroes again, aside from Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, because as I said before, they've published.
Been going on, right.
And then Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko created the Marvel Universe. And the difference between the two was, even in the 60s, even with the Silver Age at DC, they were still doing your dad's comics. They were, Superman was squeaky clean and Batman was okay and all these other things. And Stan was doing comics in the 60s that eventually became counterculture because he was doing the Fantastic Four that, instead of them hanging around and being all happy with each other, spent their off time bickering with each other the right. way a real family did. And right. the X-Men was about racism and, you know, Daredevil was blind and all of these other human qualities that Stan put in the comics in the 60s.
Yeah, it seems like from that point on, they're always looking to make, to humanize
yes.
them even more.
Because Stan would say that he looked at what DC was doing and that it was boring and that it was, you know, yes, okay, you're going to get your 5 to 9 year olds.
Right.
He was targeting the 15 year olds. He was right. targeting the college audience and stuff. As the comics.
And now look, it's 40.
Well, and now it's the 40 year olds. In terms of the 70s, the guys writing the comics in the 70s were the guys reading the comics as teenagers in the 60s.
Right.
So if you look at the history of DC Comics or Marvel Comics, you see in the 60s, guys, balding guys in the 40s wearing suits and ties and the whole thing, and basically they were telling what they thought were stories for children. And those hippies showed up in the 70s, and basically they said, let's deal with the fact that we have real life racism going on that we
right.
should be telling our stories about. Right. We have, you know, race riots, we have drug abuse, and all of a sudden the stories in the 70s were again influenced by the stuff that happened in the 60s, and it just keeps going. The reason comics got so dark in the 80s was the way society was at the time and the way people were feeling about what was going on at the time.
Right.
Reagan plays an important role in Frank Miller's Dark Knight, and he's not portrayed really well in
right.
that story. And the one that we haven't mentioned yet is Watchmen by Alan Moore,
right.
which is considered by some to be the War and Peace of comics.
Oh.
In Watchmen, Nixon's still in the White House after his 4th or 5th term. And
right.
we won the Vietnam War in a month because of our superheroes. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that the readers of today become the creators of tomorrow.
Right.
And so the
right.
things that they're putting in the comics, you know, are influenced by what that came from that.
But it's still almost exclusively male universe, isn't it? I mean, Wonder Woman is...
No, there's a lot of female characters. There's not as many female creators, and there's actually every time there's a wellspring of female writers and female artists,
right.
they tend to not do superhero stuff, because superhero stuff still tends to be male adolescent fantasies, right. And all the women are drawn a certain way, and all the guys, you know, whenever they talk about how Wonder Woman has the perfect physique, I always mention that, you know, Batman isn't exactly overweight when they draw him. there are male characters that are drawn just as ridiculously proportioned as the female characters are. A lot of the women that work in comics tend to work in either independent comics or less kind of off the superhero path. They might work in slice of life type of comics. There's actually quite a bit that's out there now for web comics where people are writing and drawing their own stories, not necessarily something that's going to be made into like a Hollywood blockbuster, but something that is going to be for a female audience. It's tough when a woman comes into the comic book store and says she's looking for something for herself to read. Now, if she says she's a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, she's a fan of the Thor movie, I can direct her towards the heroic fiction, and there are plenty of female heroes in addition to Wonder Woman. There's actually quite a few more out there than you might think.
Well, listen, John, thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you.